Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The House sets up an impeachment of President Trump as Twitter bans him and tech companies cut off the social media site Parler. Welcome. I'm Kyle Peterson with The Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. On Monday, the House introduced an impeachment resolution against the president. The whole document's about 4 pages long, so you can go online and read it in just a few minutes if you want. It includes a single article of impeachment titled Incitement to Insurrection, which says that the president issued false statements asserting that the election was fraudulent. And then in front of a crowd in Washington, he, quote, made statements that in context encouraged and foreseeably resulted in lawless action at the Capitol. So, Kim, it's looking to me like there will probably be an impeachment vote this week. It looks like it'll probably pass and it may get at least one Republican vote.
Yep. Looks like Democrats are going to move ahead with that, even though it seems to be an exercise in folly, in that if you put this forward and even if they pass it in a single day, you would still have to have a Senate manage to conduct an entire trial and move to convict Donald Trump all within 6 days solely to deprive him of one day of being a president. And that's just not going to happen, especially because Senator Mitch McConnell, who will continue to control the upper chamber or the Senate until January 20th, has said that if there are any Republican objections, they will not, potentially cannot proceed in that time frame. So, I think there's a lot of weird questions about the way they've actually framed the impeachment. I think that there are some disturbing questions about now moving it, the suggestion to move it forward, even when Donald Trump isn't even in office. And I think this could cause a lot of Americans to wonder if this is truly about righting a wrong or if it's about political mayhem and trying to score points.
Well, let's start with the timing there. As I understand it, what has happened is that the Senate is in recess, and to do anything in this period while it's in recess would require essentially unanimous consent, which isn't going to happen. And so McConnell is saying that the earliest the Senate could take up an impeachment trial is January 19th, and everybody knows that Joe Biden's inauguration is the next day, January 20th. And so in one scenario here, you're talking about the first few days, maybe weeks, of Joe Biden's administration being taken up with this. And Bill, Biden has said now that he has asked the Senate parliamentarian whether the Senate can, quote, go a half day with the impeachment and a half day getting my people nominated and confirmed in the Senate and moving on a coronavirus package.
Yeah, so much healing, isn't there? I'm just overwhelmed by it. Look, I'm not so sure this is good for Joe Biden. We're all talking about Donald Trump, who I don't think has much influence over the way ahead. But Joe Biden has called for healing. Also, this is being directed by, you know, Nancy Pelosi and other parts of Congress and so forth, as is appropriate. It's a congressional prerogative, impeachment. But I think that Joe Biden would gain a lot more respect by just saying, this is not what we need at this moment. I think he threatens to have his administration and his inaugural overwhelmed by impeachment. And it sounds like it's going to drag on if they have their way. I don't think in the long run that's good for a Biden administration. I just think it's going to suck a lot of the air out of the room. And I'm not sure it actually makes it easier for him. I think it certainly inflames passions, you know, at a time when even he said we need to calm them. So I don't quite get what the goal is here, what the end goal is. I mean, again, impeachment is basically designed to remove a president from office. If this were a year ago or something, it might make sense. But when he's on his way out, it just seems designed to further inflame people. And I don't think that will be good for Joe Biden.
Well, I mean, one response to that you'd probably hear is the House would make it clear that the attack on the Capitol can't stand. But I agree the timing is an issue. And the other way that the Senate, the House could theoretically go, House Majority Whip James Clyburn raised this idea over the weekend, is that the House could impeach and then hold the articles, hold on to them, and then let Joe Biden get his nominees in place. This is what Clyburn said. Let's give President-elect Biden the 100 days he needs to get his agenda off and running, and maybe we'll send the articles sometime after that, unquote. But then, Kim, in that scenario, you're talking about doing an impeachment trial in May?
Yeah, I mean, look, if the goal of this is a quick rebuke, then that, you know, this makes zero sense to do it in that time frame. And to Bill's point, all it does is continue to keep the focus on Donald Trump for months into Joe Biden's time as president. And again, to what purpose? Now, some people have pointed out that it would seem that Mrs. Pelosi, one of her goals is to try to ensure that Donald Trump can't run again for president in 2024. But if you want to do that, you need to get a Senate conviction, whether now or whether in May or whenever it is. And that means a two-thirds majority, as well as an explicit language saying that Donald Trump is not going to be able to run again in 2024. That's not likely to happen. It's not likely to happen now. It's not likely to happen in the future. I suppose there could potentially be some evidence that could come out, but it would have to be, I mean, something, for instance, to suggest that the White House coordinated with people who went into the Congress. But again, I think barring that, you're just not going to have that many Republicans who would ever agree to convict on something like that. And then you'd have the additional thorny question about whether or not the Constitution even allows impeachment after a president leaves office. And there's some pretty important legal scholars who have made a pretty compelling case that it does not.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. And you're right that there's different legal opinions on that. But at the very least, Bill, I think it's fair to say that that's a reason that Republicans could cite as they voted against impeachment or against conviction.
Yeah, that's true. I think one difference maybe between you and me, Kyle, is that I don't think that the Democrats are serious about the Constitution or anything. If you look at the last impeachment, you know, which Mrs. Pelosi launched just by announcing it rather than have a vote, I don't think this is about the Constitution or anything. I think it's just we're going to get even with the guy and kick him when he's down and try to discredit every Republican. And, you know, that's how I read it. I think that we're taking a lot of these issues. I think in general, Republicans take these issues a lot more seriously than Democrats. And I think that's true here. I think this is really just a political play while they're on top to humiliate them on the way out and discredit Republicans, which is just going to be the opposite of the healing and unity that Joe Biden says he wants and that we should work for.
Well, on that point, I mean, Bill's column today, and I think also the Journal's editorial today, says that Biden should call for this impeachment not to take place. But Kim, do you think that Nancy Pelosi, the House, would listen to that? Or if the answer is no, that it's worth having Joe Biden do that anyway?
Well, he should do this for starters, because he campaigned on healing. He campaigned on bringing the country together. In fact, he didn't really campaign on anything else. You know, we wrote endless editorials about how we couldn't really hear Joe Biden talking about his policy agenda. Instead, it was about how Donald Trump was a disruption and how you needed someone in office who was going to show actual leadership. Well, here's a moment to actually do that. I'm not sure if Nancy Pelosi would listen, because it's the anger and the vitriol among her progressive left is still thumping. And they want this kind of retribution. They want to you know, bring it to the Republican Party, and they see this as a way of doing it. But it would nonetheless be a gesture that I think a lot of Americans would appreciate, because, you know, I keep pointing out all these Democrats who are saying, you know, that we need to make an example of this. We need to have accountability. Well, you know, that was the argument that a lot of us on the right have been making for a long time, too, that there needed to be accountability, for instance, for 3 years of a fake Russia collusion hoax. Who's accountable for that? That was also an attempt to overturn an election. And so someone's got to end the cycle. It would be great if Joe Biden stepped up and did what he said he was going to do during the campaign and made that gesture.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. oracle.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. A couple other thoughts on the impeachment issue. One is that I wonder if the House has made a mistake if they frame this as incitement to insurrection. And a couple of reasons there. I mean, one is that incitement is a crime with a specific legal standard, producing imminent lawless action. There are legal experts who are saying that Trump's speech in Washington probably didn't meet that. And the second bill is that word insurrection seems very loaded. And I wonder how that strikes the median voter who's looking at this.
I agree with that. Look, I think in a court of law, it would be very hard to make the case for incitement, as one of the op-eds we had suggested by a former prosecutor, because he didn't actually tell them to go commit. In fact, he told them to make their points peacefully. But again, impeachment's not a court of law, and you're not necessarily charged with a crime, a legal crime, even though in this case the language is very similar. But so I think anything can happen. They can more or less decide the offense that they want, and they can convict either way. I do think it would be interesting. I mean, one of the points about rushing this is I do think that you have to let Trump defend himself and have to go through this thoughtfully. I mean, there is no way to go through this thoughtfully in a week. And again, I'm not sure it'd be as easy to convict once people heard, you know, the full story and what incitement really means, as you say, an insurrectionist. I mean, I think it'd be very hard as a legal proposition to do that. But could they do it politically as Congress? Absolutely.
Look, I think, too, one other aspect of this and why that language is notable is that Mrs. Pelosi has also sent a letter to her members asking for their thoughts on potentially trying to bar Mr. Trump from future office under Section 3 of the Constitution's 14th Amendment. And that is language that bars anyone from holding office who has, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion, end quote, against the United States. I think the problem with that is that in the past, when that has been used and it was aimed at members of the Confederacy after the Civil War, it was after a court had actually found individuals guilty of insurrection. And no court has made a finding here like that against President Trump. But that could be behind her kind of maneuvering there and the language of that actual impeachment article.
But I mean, I do think that maneuvering has an effect. I mean, just to take a temperature check here on public opinion, the website 538 did an aggregation of 13 poll questions asking whether Trump should leave office early. And it found 52% of Americans saying yes, while only 42% saying no. Just to compare, back during the last impeachment, over the Ukraine scandal, the yes category was, you know, around 48%, less than half. But it's not directly comparable to this new data because the new data is a mix of, you know, should we impeach? Should we have the 25th Amendment? Should there be a resignation? And of course, there's also a partisan skew, as you'd expect, Bill. 82% of Democrats say they want Trump to leave early, but only 15% of Republicans.
Yeah, well, look, I agree with the Wall Street Journal's editorial on this. I believe that it would have been better if Trump had resigned, and not just better for his enemies, better for himself. I mean, I certainly think that a resignation would be better than another impeachment or using the 25th Amendment to get rid of him. So there's a lot of reasons for wanting him to go. I think that, you know, a lot of people, or maybe I shouldn't even say a lot, but people like me do think it's best, not because we're vindictive to President Trump, but we just think the situation calls for that. I also think that it's just terrible to make decisions when fever is at its highest pitch now on both sides. And I just wonder how this is going to look 3 or 4 months from now, maybe 6 months from now, if they keep it around. I'm not sure many people are going to benefit from that. And I'm pretty sure the nation isn't going to benefit. And I would like to see more thought about where is this going to put us, you know, 3 months into the Biden administration. You know, are we still going to be haggling over Trump every day? That can't be good for anyone, including the president, the new president.
Finally, after the riot at the Capitol last week, Twitter banned President Trump, and Amazon and Apple moved to cut off an upstart social network called Parler. These are kind of separate issues, so maybe let's take them one at a time. Kim, what's your read of the Twitter ban, and do you think there will be any broader exodus from Twitter?
Well, look, it was a bad idea. You know, according to Twitter, especially because of the reasons that they actually threw him off. According to Twitter, the mere fact that the president had sent out a note saying, "I will not be attending the inauguration," was somehow some loaded, coded message to all of his followers that they could go commit violent acts at the inauguration. And that's just something where you end up reading into a straightforward sentence all kinds of nefarious motives. And if that's how Twitter's going to handle people, it's absolutely crazy. But the bigger what this has done is just kicked off this enormous debate about Twitter's power. You have a lot of people now deciding that they're going to quit the platform. But the dual problem, of course, was that about the same time all this happened, Twitter and Facebook and banning of the president, you had the main competitor to Twitter, the company called Parler, get shut down itself by Apple and Amazon and Google, saying that they hadn't done enough to police the free speech on their site. So you got no place to talk on Twitter and no place to talk on an alternative. And I think in the end, this is going to backfire on the big tech companies because it's going to inspire more lawsuits and more attention from Congress and potentially legal action against them.
Yeah, you may be right that it will backfire and was unwise for that reason. I mean, I guess my view on Twitter is just that this is not really a First Amendment issue. Twitter's not a public forum. You know, it's an advertising business. That's all it is. It's an advertising business. Its product is your eyeballs. It made a judgment that it's no longer interested in one of its top content providers, Donald Trump, and that will not stop the president from getting his message out, given that he's the president and he's also a billionaire. But what I do think is also fair criticism is that you can find all sorts of other nasty stuff on Twitter, people defending rioting. There's a tweet by Iran's Ayatollah in May that's still up, I think. It says, "The only remedy until the removal of the Zionist regime is firm armed resistance," unquote. I mean, it's hard to compare that to Trump's tweets, Bill, and articulate any clear standard from Twitter.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kyle. I mean, the way I'd phrase it slightly different. I mean, the way I look at it is slightly different in that I think Twitter and these other big tech operations probably have the right to do what they did legally. But that doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. I mean, most businesses understand that at least part of your success is your reputation among the community. And I think it's pretty clear big tech is incredibly biased, incredibly powerful, and they're not afraid to throw their weight around and come down on one side. Ultimately, again, I don't think that helps them in the future, because they're looking down on this debate about Section 230, which, as you know, means they're not liable for a lot of the stuff that's printed on their site, you know, really nasty stuff too. And I actually am very skeptical of taking away that, for reasons I think, and in fact, I think, Kyle, you've written about, that it might lead to more censorship. But the reality is that there are a lot of people in Congress that hate these companies. A lot of Republicans see how they're trying to snuff out conservative voices, while, as you point out, they allow all sorts of other things that are disgusting on their website. And on the left, they just don't like big and successful and powerful companies. So I think they're really playing with fire here. I don't know what's going to come out of the Congress, but I can see some bipartisan cooperation in the sense Democrats pass something to cut these guys down to size. And a lot of Republicans who may not like that particular way of doing it, but they don't like big tech, they'll stand aside or support some of it. So I think from their own point of view, they are playing with fire.
And Parler now has filed an antitrust lawsuit against Amazon, arguing that this move was motivated by political animus. And I mean, this issue, I think, at least to me, looks thornier, in that when you start talking about Apple's App Store and Amazon's hosting cloud services, you get down to something, Kim, that from a certain perspective looks a little closer to like a utility, the underlying structure of the internet.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'd push back just a little bit on your comment and about how there's no problem here with Facebook or Twitter and that, you know, private companies. I think one of the reasons that this is a little bit more complicated than that is because of this little thing we have called the First Amendment. And yeah, there private companies do have rights. But when it begins to look, as it has done in the past week, that these companies are acting at the bidding of government to censor certain, or at least one party in government to censor certain players, I think that brings up thornier questions. I don't know what the answer to that is legally, but I don't think it's as cut as dry as just saying, you know, private companies. But I do agree with you, the Parler action is even more concerning, and I think even maybe more legally cut and dry that there are a problem here. And it gets to two different issues. One, as you said, the kind of common carrier question, but also potentially an antitrust issue. Look, when you got a company like Parler that is a competitor to Twitter, or a competitor to big tech in different places or new things, and all of big tech joins together to just shut it down. Yeah, I think that is an alarming question about monopoly power. And that's been one of the big complaints, even among Democrats, about companies like Apple, for instance, or Amazon and its cloud services. I do think it's important to keep these different services, distinct, because you're talking about different issues of market power. But that's why, again, I think that these guys have potentially, stuck their fingers in a beehive.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I agree. There's plenty to be concerned about with the market power of these companies over the tech infrastructure. But, you know, from Apple's perspective, I mean, what they say is that a Parler did not act swiftly enough to take down speech that they found to be problematic, threats of violence, et cetera, et cetera. And it's worth pointing out, I think, that Apple does this kind of thing all the time. I mean, Apple, if you look at the App Store terms, it says that there's a lot of kids downloading the App Store. And so they ban everything here. I pulled out a couple examples, Bill. They ban anything, apps that facilitate the purchase of firearms, to overtly sexual material, to any apps that have trick or joke functionality, like showing you fake GPS coordinates or something like that, to, quote, inflammatory religious commentary, unquote, which, Bill, is obviously religious commentary is obviously something that's protected by the First Amendment.
Right. Look, I just don't believe any of this is sincere. I think people are just piling on now. And I just don't think any of it is really sincere, because you don't really hear the left howling about their stuff being taken down. I think it's pretty clear what the agenda is here. One of the problems I have is that if you have to allow a Parler or some conservative group, then you can't do anything about pornography or anything. I mean, this is a classic First Amendment test, right? That's been on for a while. I think really what we're seeing now is not just taking down, like, let's arrest Mike Pence and frog march him down to justice, or let's kidnap Nancy Pelosi. I think they just don't like conservative thought, and they're going to police it.
Right. And I think that that gets to very notable words that Kyle just used, which is, you know, in their mind, you know, Kyle, you were just saying, well, you know, if they engage in speech that according to these companies is problematic, then you take it down or you don't allow them to sell their app. Well, what if, you know, it's one thing to define that as violence or pornography or any of the other things that you just said. But what if they decide that they're not going to broadcast any app that engages in any way whatsoever of questioning climate change? You know, what does that mean? So I think that, again, one of the problems here is companies that seem to be operating at the behest of government or at least one party, or pressure from that one party, and whether or not that pushes them into the zone of censorship.
Well, we've certainly not heard the last of this issue. There will probably be some hearings up on Capitol Hill, and I'm sure we'll be back to talk about it then. But for now, thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.